It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for the 118th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have an interview with a frequent guest on this podcast, Phil Hester, who is both a great artist and a great writer. We talk about the projects he's working on right now, and he gives us a couple of hints about projects he's going to be working on in the future. As always, we talk a little bit about the industry, and you'll enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome back to the podcast Phil Hester, both artist and writer and creator of such good things as Thunder Agents and Invincible Universe. How are you doing today, Phil?
Great, Wayne. How are you?
Good. It's good to talk with you again. Every once in a while, I feel I need to check up on you and find out what's happening because you're always writing some good things. And these days, it seems like team books are your forte.
Yeah, and through no design of my own. It's just happened that way. I never really anticipated writing so many team books, and I never really thought I could handle all that many moving pieces, but both of these assignments sort of fell into my lap, and they're both properties I care a lot about, and writing a team book sort of came natural to me after all.
Great, because the Thunder Agents I loved. I read Thunder Agents way back when I was growing up and the first bunch. And then I read the George Perez group that came along later than that. And then I read the Nick Spencer group. And now you get to do it. And I think you're doing a great job differentiating the characters. As much as I like Mr. Spencer's work, sometimes it was really kind of muddled and I couldn't figure out what was happening exactly. But with you, I don't have that problem because you know how to clear these kind of paths for all the different characters. And I like that a lot.
Well, I think I don't go quite as back as far as you do. Well, indirectly I do. I sort of came in to being a Thunder Agents fan during that sort of cloudy era of ownership of the Thunder Agents, and and there was a widespread belief during the sort of the black and white explosion time that those characters were in the public domain. Mm-hmm. And so a bunch of people, you know, had Thunder Agents books on the stands. And I bought all of them because they're fascinating characters, both visually and conceptually. But those books sort of turned me on to the original Wally Wood series, and so I quickly went back and threw the back issue bin and sort of built my library of Thunder Agents that way. But yeah, I'm a fan of that original material, so the book I'm doing isn't necessarily a reboot. It is a new take on the characters, but done such that we are not disposing of all the really cool stuff that came with those original stories. Mm-hmm.
So how did you get to work on the book? I mean, did IDW approach you about it? How did it happen?
Well, this rarely happens in comics. I heard about a gig, wanted the gig, pitched the gig, and got the gig, which doesn't happen a lot. I heard it through the grapevine that they got the Thunder Agents license. A lot of people don't understand that the Thunder Agents is a licensed property. Mm-hmm. The Usulins own the Thunder Agents license, and they licensed it to DC, and now they license it to IDW. Mm-hmm. And so they make sort of the final decisions about, you know, talent and storyline and stuff like that. But when I heard that IDW had gone after that license, I immediately, you know, pulled every string I had at IDW and said, at least let me pitch. Mm-hmm. And I went for broke, and I felt really good about the pitch. And usually that's the kiss of death. If you feel great about a pitch, it's almost never going to fly. But IDW seemed to really dig it and let me run with it. And I have to thank Chris and everybody up at IDW for that.
Yeah, well, it's such a fun book to read and such a great thing. It has that feel to it, you know. If you don't know the characters, you're learning about them. But if you do know the characters, you're adding little bits to it and kind of explaining little things that happened, like Dynamo's origin and things like that, which I really liked. You know, I think that Dynamo was one of the characters that I've always been drawn to from the Thunder Agent, just because he's got – I like the blue and white costume and the belt and the whole business and the crackle noise when he turns it on and all that. And I always thought he was a great character. I think that you've made him more human than I've seen him in the past.
That was my goal. We wanted, in the original series, he's definitely still an everyman, but he's a Thunder agent. Mm-hmm. And the thing about the Thunder agents is they're all kind of out there. They're all kind of weird, either by dint of their powers or their personalities. They're all kind of crazy. And this whole idea of there's this giant espionage organization or defense organization that deals with all these weird menaces, that's a big, weird concept to get a handle on, and readers need an entry point into that. And, you know, the best entry point is someone like them, you know, but see it through his eyes. And Len is definitely he's a good person, but he's not necessarily heroic. If you've read number one, you can see that. We're sort of learning the ropes along with Len.
Well, I think it's a good thing to have the character develop, because, you know, back in the days when the original Thunder Agents came out, you know, when the Justice League got together, the only thing that made most of them different was they had different powers or different things. Right. You know, Green Arrow was slightly different from Batman because he had an aeroplane, and Batman had a, that always makes me laugh, an aeroplane. And then Batman had his Batplane and stuff like that. But if they didn't have different powers, you wouldn't know them from each other. But that's one of the things I think you've done really well, is established all these people as different individuals, not only different powers and different circumstances, but different individual personalities. And I just think of a team book, you have to have that or you're going to be done.
They have to contrast each other. Otherwise, if they're of one mind about everything, there's no reason to ever talk to each other. And if there's no conflict there's no drama. And it doesn't mean you have to have everything being angst-ridden, because I hope those books don't come across that way, but I hope they come across as things that are happening almost like the banter you see in a movie like Ghostbusters, you know, where things are happening, but the banter between all the characters on screen is so engaging and fun. It sort of pulls you along through the adventure, and you ride along with them. You feel like you're part of that adventure.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like I know these people. You know, the way that I even know Man, who was, you know, who's hopping from body to body. I feel like I know him. I like the coldness that he kind of has. That's one of the things that makes him stand out a little bit. Even though he still does have, you can still sense this humanity in him. But it's got to be something weird to jump from body to body like
he does. The part of his humanity that remains is sort of his cutting wit. But I have this take on No Man that he was probably like that before he got into his robot body. You know, as an elderly man who is a man of science, that sort of coldness might just be part of his inner personality, not necessarily because his, whatever you want to call it, his being is now, you know, housed in a robot form. That may be a character trait that's carried over from his original form. But that's something to explore later.
Yeah. Does he feel sensation and things like that in the robot body?
Yeah.
Does it? So he does. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, sort of blunted, but yeah, it's there.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's going to make him a little more human because, you know, oftentimes you get people in a robot body and they can't feel anything. Right. They get numb to everything. So that's a good thing. I like that about that.
One of the core concepts of the Thunder Agents is that every power these characters seem to have comes with a heavy price. You know, Len's used to be the time limit on his power, and now it's this sort of pain threshold in the current book. And Lightning, of course, is burning his candle at both ends. And No Man is sort of, as he spends more and more time outside of that, grounded in his human body, he, you know, feels a little bit of that humanity slipping away. And that's something that's key to all these characters. There is this price to pay, and you're going to watch them pay it. And for some, it could be lethal, you know. And I think that's what separates them from run-of-the-mill superheroes.
Well, you brought up Lightning, and that's one of the things I always like was the fact that, I mean, he's burning up his life energy as he goes faster than a normal human goes. And, I mean, that's got to catch up with him before too very long, because a lot of the times he's going pretty fast.
Yeah, but what I also wanted to get across is that isn't really bothering him so much because it's fun to go fast. I wanted to get across that he's a fun-loving character. He's always, through all these adventures, he's always the one to chime in with a quip or banter. And that's not false bravado. That's not him trying to bury that sort of ticking clock in the middle of his chest. That's his actual attitude. You know, why? If my life is short, it's going to be glorious, and I might as well just enjoy it.
Well, that's the thing about these characters is that there's something very unique about them. Because, you know, other characters, they have to stay exactly the same because somebody's going to write them from month to month to month, and then you've got to, you know, you've just got to have people be able to pick up where you left off. But with this book, you've got...
Yeah. I call it the Superman's underwear syndrome. You know, we all know Superman's underwear's coming back. Right?
Right. Right.
So, you know, 5 years ago, Steve Rogers was dead.
Right.
Who thought
right.
Rogers was staying dead?
Right.
Who thought Peter Parker was staying dead a year ago?
Right.
Not
right.
Me. You know, nope. And that's sort of that. I understand why those writers have to make those choices because, by and large, these are static properties that can't change permanently over time. But Thunder Agents, always, even from the very first page of the very first issue of the Wally Wood series, you had the idea that anything could happen to these characters. And, you know, as you know as a fan of the original series, those things did happen to the characters. Not all of them made it, you know.
No.
And I really love that. I think that sort of those higher stakes make that a more fun book to read.
I think Gil Kane drew the original Lightning, and we actually saw him turn into an old man, if I remember correctly.
Characters, you know, they die in this comic. I don't want to spoil anything about my book, but, you know, we will see prices paid.
Good. Well, see, that's the kind of thing that we don't get to see in many other books, and that's what I like about Thunder Agents real well, is that it's making things much more realistic. This is kind of, I hate to say it, but this is what would happen if we were given those kinds of things. It's likely those things would hurt us just as well as hurting them. So it's got that very strong feel to it, and it's such a good book, and I enjoy coming out. Now, Iron Maiden, of course, is I enjoy your take on her as well. You've done some very unique things with her as compared to the past, because Iron Maiden, basically, we never knew who she was. She just had an iron mask on, and now you've actually given her an identity, and I find that really interesting. Now I'm really intrigued to find out what's going on with her.
Yeah, and it's not too difficult for anyone who's – I'm not spoiling anything. It wouldn't be too difficult for anyone who's read the book to piece together that it's that Iron Maiden is Kat Kane's sister, and Kat Kane is now – in my version of the book, is the director of Thunder. Not just one of the Thunder Squad, and that there was some sort of split that took place early on in their lives that sort of drove Iron Maiden to become a villain and Cat to become sort of the Captain America of this Thunder universe.
Okay. Well, it's such a good book, and I really enjoy it, and I always recommend it to people because they're such good characters, and you've got such a good take on them that I hope it's around for a long time to come because
I'm glad to hear that. And I feel really excited about the book now because although I really liked what Andrea DeVito did at the beginning, Roger Robinson's our new artist, and Roger comes on with, I think, a better understanding of the characters and of sort of paying homage to those Wally Wood years without being slavish to them. So I think if you checked out their early issues and they weren't, you know, sort of your cup of tea, you know, try again at number 5 and see what Roger's done with it, because Roger's really blown the lid off of it.
Have you got any plans for the characters? I mean, now that you've gotten 5 issues in, I'm sure you've got really good handles for them. Are there any things that, and of course, don't spoil stuff. I want to be teased, not spoiled. So what do you have in mind for these folks?
We will see the appearance of a Cadet Janus in an upcoming issue, and, of course, there are plans for him. We will get a little more backstory on the origin of Thunder in general and those magical super weapons that Professor Jennings created. And we'll sort of get to the bottom of sort of the MacGuffin in that first story arc was a thing called the Judgment Tower. And we're going to get a little more insight into how they represent a threat to life on Earth in general.
Cool. There's a little bit of science fiction to it, too, that I really like.
Yeah, it's sort of like... You know, we can't really go back to that Cold War dynamic. That just doesn't fly anymore. And the original books had that sort of flavor, that sort of pseudo-science fiction flavor. So I decided to delve into that a little bit more. But yeah, there's plenty of that there. And we will see. I'm not going to spoil anything. You know, Dr. Sparta's coming up, and there's his dinosaurs, which are, if you were a kid reading the original series, Dr. Sparta's dinosaurs were sort of, you know... like candy, you know, you couldn't resist that stuff.
Well, kids like dinosaurs too, so that's always a good thing. So that's in there. Yeah, I'm glad that's going along real well. Now, why don't we move over to the other team book? Let's talk about Invincible Universe. You know, when I saw that the title that was called, what was it called before Invincible Universe? It was
Guardians
called
the Globe.
Yeah, when I saw it was ending,
I'm sorry, no, it wasn't. It was called Guarding the Globe.
Guarding the Globe. That's
the
right.
The team
that's
was called the Global Guardians.
That's right. That's
and
right.
the reason we had to change that, of course, is because Marvel has their Guardians of the Galaxy, and DC has had a group called Global Guardians, too. I don't know if you remember that group.
Yeah, I remember them. Yeah. I was so worried because I thought, man, I was really enjoying what was going on. You really, you grasped you got the characters real well, and their powers and things, their interactions were very different than what I expected. And so when I saw that it was ending, I was like, oh, no, I was really looking forward to this book.
Yeah, we just retitled it. Well, Robert's a really canny marketer. I mean, Robert's always got his finger on the pulse of what works and what doesn't work in comics. And he saw we were coming up on issue 7, which would be our first issue after the first trade.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what can we do to bump this up? And we kicked around all sorts of gimmicky ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And he remembered an interview I gave in which I described the book as, what else is happening in the Invincible Universe? And I said, you know what, in the interview I even joked, we should call it that and have Invincible really big on the title and Universe really small so people think they're buying Invincible. And Robert remembered that, and he's like, you know what, we really should call it Invincible Universe. So it's not a reboot at all. In fact, issue 1 of Invincible Universe is issue 7 of Guarding the Globe.
Yeah.
It just has a different title on it. A little more Invincible in the book.
Mm-hmm.
He's mm-hmm. there a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one I really like the most is Kid Thor.
Yeah, people, you know what, I'm surprised you said that. People do say that, but usually people say Best Tiger. Best Tiger is everybody's favorite lately.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, Kid Thor, of course, he's got all this going on. He's, you know, for somebody who's very, you know, mythological of a character, you've actually kind of limited that character. He's got to always hang on to the hammer, or else he's in big trouble.
Yeah, and once again, I think this came up while I was doing my Thunder Agents pitch,
mm-hmm.
and I really like this idea of like everything coming with a price.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, you know, it's not just enough for him to be a hip modern Thor. He's got to have a price to pay for this. And
mm-hmm.
anyone who's read the book knows he needs to now hold on to that hammer to stay alive.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of a neat little,
mm-hmm.
a neat little, you know, sort of Stan Lee, Jack Kirby wrinkle to throw on a character.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, back in the old day, Thor used to have to, if he lost contact with the hammer for so long, he'd turn back into Don Blake, as I remember.
Right, right.
And so I like this. You've upped the ante quite significantly on that,
yeah.
And I like that a lot. So one of the things I like, too, you did a whole issue on the dog.
Yes.
Which surprised the heck out of me. I picked a book up and I thought, this is going to be interesting. And sure enough, it was all about the dog. I forget the dog's name all the time. What's his name?
Le Bruisier.
Le Bruisier, okay.
It looks like Le Bruiser. She's French, so we say Le Bruisier.
Okay, okay. Because we basically followed her for the whole issue. And I have to say, that was a nice change of pace. Well, it's good when you have a team book that you go through and you get individual characters, especially if they're not involved in other books, give them a chance to shine every once in a while. And I thought that was really great.
Well, Todd Knock is such a great artist that I can get away with saying, let's do anything, and he can pull it off. So we had this decision early on between Robert and Sean, our editor, to do like a couple issues that were big saga issues, mm-hmm. and then sandwich those between those big sagas, sandwich a couple spotlight issues.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is number 7, I think it is Le Bruisier's spotlight issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for a long time we were going to make it a wordless issue,
mm-hmm.
Just really see it from her perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some subplot stuff that we needed to establish, so we couldn't quite get away with that. But, you know, Todd's storytelling is so clear, you could probably read it without the word balloons.
Well, it was a great fun issue. It was fun to follow the dog around and see what she's doing.
Yeah.
You know, that was quite a change for me. I really didn't expect it when I got the book and I opened it up. I said, wait a second, this is going to be the dog.
Yeah.
You know, she's going to be the main character. I like that.
You know, that's the thing about team books. Every character is somebody's favorite character from the book.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people that love the dog, and when that solo issue came, we got a ton of mail. So
did you? Oh, wow. I'm interested that you got so much reaction to it. That's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it was neat. And it was unlike anything on the stands that month.
Mm-hmm. So I guess this went over pretty well. You're probably likely to do this on occasion with other characters, I imagine, in the future.
Yeah, we had a Best Tiger solo, and we had a Chupacabra solo issue, and you know, as the storyline warrants, we'll step aside and do solo issues as, you know,
mm-hmm.
as the book warrants.
Mm-hmm. one of the characters I've loved for a long time, of course, is Britt, and I still enjoy what you're doing with him. I just think that's a wonderful storyline that you're working with him.
Yeah, I think he's probably my favorite Kirkman creation. And partially because no one's ever seen it, but I had a very similar character to that sort of in my back pocket for a long time. I really love the idea of an older superhero. And not cheating old, not like Earth too old. You know, somebody who was actually old and had experience and had obligations and had children and maybe even grandchildren and dealing with all those problems. And so when I saw Britt, I was like, well, this is like the perfect old character. And, you know, he had a kid, and that was something that was fun to deal with. And and in a way that was like, I didn't want to do it in a sort of light, oh, this is what it's like to have a family. Isn't that funny? Family circle kind of way. I wanted, you know, I'm a family man myself, and I wanted to get over sort of like the highs and lows of having a family. And I think we did that with Britt Jr.'s autism. I think that sort of brought all that
up. Well, it's unusual to see an autistic character in a comic. You don't see many of them.
Not treated like a superpower. You know, too often it's sort of, they want to focus on the Rain Man aspects of it and not the day-to-day aspects of it.
Well, what's the gentleman who is the robot that goes along and is Britt's friend?
Robot.
Yeah.
Name Robot, yes.
Yeah, he's...
You mean Donald.
Yes, what I mean. Yeah. I mean, Robot's an interesting character also,
yeah,
but...
we have multiple robots in our book.
Well, I like Donald because, you know, he's like a human being. You know, we talked a little bit before about what would you be like inside of a robot body, and this is kind of a... I mean, he has no problems because he feels like, well, I'm almost invulnerable, just like Britt is, and therefore I can do whatever I'd like to in any circumstance, and I find him such an interesting character. Because
of bigger,
that.
I think the bigger problem for him is trying to understand how other people relate to him being a robot. And it's difficult for him. He, like you said, he feels fine. So he can't quite get his head around why his wife is still freaked out. But you can put yourself in the wife's shoes and understand, you know, if your husband came home and he was made of plastic, you know, it would be disturbing. And, so, yeah, the way his family deals with that is sort of at the core of his character.
Now, you've used a lot of characters, of course, that Mr. Kirkman invented, and I think you put some of your own in there as well, if I remember correctly.
Actually, no.
No, not yet?
One of the restrictions of the book is that we are only allowed to use characters that have been in the Invincible Universe before. I can create sporting characters, but no new superheroes or real supervillains, just stuff.
Oh, really?
Well, you know, there are characters that have debuted in the book, but those have been created by Robert and Corey Walker.
Okay.
Since it's their universe, they sort of want to keep a tight rein on what gets created in it. And so I will come up to them with a story problem and go, hey, I need a space villain. And they'll either say you can use this guy or, you know, they'll create one. In terms, like in the earlier series, we had a villain called Set, and we wanted to introduce his brother as sort of a rival, and Robert and Corey set about creating his brother Thoth, and so that seems like a new character that I introduced, but it's actually Robert and Corey.
Do you get to input on the characters, or do they tell you what the character?
Like I said, I'll come to them and say, well, here's what I need. You know, I'll need this kind of type of character. And then usually Corey goes to town, and Corey's character designs are, gosh, I think they're the best in the business. He has a daily sketch blog where he posts sketches every day, and they're usually alternative takes on existing superheroes, and they're just they're mind-blowingly gorgeous. Some couldn't work, some could, but they're always fascinating. Anytime I can ask Corey to create a character, I abuse that power, you know. Corey, make something else up for me.
Now, of course, Mr. Kirkman, being as busy as he is with Walking Dead and all this other good stuff going on, how often do you actually get to interact with him working on that book?
It depends. If I'm screwing up, I hear from him a lot. If there are long periods of silence, I know I'm doing okay. It's sort of – here's the thing. It's like Robert, he's very respectful of what I do as a writer, so he tries not to quash it. But at the same time, these are his babies. So if he sees me going in the wrong direction, he'll ring me up and say, you know, Britt would never do that. Or, you know, you can't have this guy date that girl, you know. That wouldn't happen. So it's that's sort of mostly what we talk about.
Well, it must be fun to ride that train, though. I mean, you know, Mr. Kirkman right now is one of the hottest names in comics and television, so it must be fun to interact with him.
And you're right. He is busy. He is a super busy guy.
Yeah.
And I'm happy for his success, but I know there's a part of him that probably just wants to be that guy who's just writing funny books again. But in the meantime, God bless. He deserves. He's worked harder than probably anybody I know to get where he's at.
Well, Walking Dead's coming back on again very shortly, so
yeah, I'm way behind, so don't talk about that. I don't know why.
Okay.
And plus, in my mind, I have the comic book continuity in my mind. You know,
yeah.
So when I see things in the show that are different from the comic book, I'm like, oh, why'd they do that? I mean, I understand, but.
Yeah, yeah. See, I have both. And so for me, I say, oh, that's different from the comic. And, you know, we used to do discussion panels on Walking Dead at, we go to sci-fi conventions and we would sit around and talk about it. And oftentimes I would talk about the comic and people, most of the people there actually watch the TV show and have no idea what has ever happened in the comic.
Yeah.
And so I had to stop talking about the comic because people were going like, that didn't happen on the show. What are you talking about?
It's really two different universes at this point.
Mm-hmm. But it's good. You know, I really wish that other creations of Mr. Kirkman would end up on the TV because he's got a good basis for a lot of these good things. So.
Well, he's got the juice now, so I think you will see more stuff from him. I'm not letting anything leak, but I think you'll see more stuff from him in the future.
Because, you know, every comic book to me is like a debut or a suggestion of of a show.
Right.
You know, you could take Invincible Universe and take it to somebody and say, look, you know, with technology as it is now, you could actually make this into a TV show.
It'd be
you know,
an expensive show.
Yeah. Well, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of going along and Arrow and other things like that. And everything to me is when you're doing a comic book, it's you put that in somebody's hand and in a producer's hand. Now, granted, they'll likely rip it to bits.
Right.
But it's an idea of what you can at least start with. So I always think that's a good thing. But,
yeah, that's sort of why, I mean, when I create a comic book now, I really fight the tendency to tailor it for a television or film because I know that's going to happen, because I know what, from experience, and I'm not talking about Firebreath here because I like the way Firebreath was adapted.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about other things I've optioned. Mm-hmm. I know from experience that the first thing that Hollywood wants to do when they get a hold of your property is sort of neuter it and water it down and make it and homogenize it. And so, if anything, it makes me make weirder ideas because if it starts weird and, you know, and if it starts weird upon reentry to the atmosphere, by the time it burns up and hits the ground, there'll still be this, like, core of my good weird idea in it. And so, if anything, it's forcing me to veer a little bit left.
Well, the thing that I don't understand is you find this thing and it works, and the first thing you do is say, I don't want it to work like that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's endemic to Hollywood because you can look at a guy like, look at how much money James Cameron has made for Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, billions and billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
But they still make him put up his own money to make movies. You know, they don't trust him. I mean, you know, Spielberg, you know, has really never made a bad movie, ever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Always made money making movies and still has to go through that studio system where they sort of tear everything down before he can make it. But, you know, in Hollywood, no matter how much of a genius you are or how much money you've made for them, everyone there's got to sort of justify their job. And they do that by nitpicking things to death. And it's what's beautiful about comics is that I have a book coming out from Image next year, and there is nobody between me and what's going to come out. Once Eric Stevenson said yes to it, that was sort of the last hurdle. And now it's my book. And if for good or ill, it's going to be what I want to say. And you can't really, I mean, you can do that in small films, maybe. You can do that in independent film, but you can't do that on big budget films or television.
Have they announced that yet?
No.
That book?
No, I can't really.
All right, well, we'll wait for that lovely announcement to come out then. What can you tell us about what you're working on that's coming out soon?
Almost nothing. Like you said, I'm working on Thunder Agents and Invincible Universe for now. I'm doing some covers for Dynamite's Gold Key Revival books. They're coming out with some Magnus and Dr. Solar and Dr. Spectre and stuff like that, and I'm working on some covers for those. But outside of that, it's a couple of Image projects that are not announced yet. So I hate to be coy, but
oh, that's okay.
You'll be seeing too much of me in Image, probably.
Well, you said one time that people either want you to write or draw, but never the two of them together.
Yeah.
My hope is that some of these projects will actually let you do that.
That's how I pitched the Image book. I pitched it as something that I was going to write and draw.
Oh, cool.
And that's how I sold it. And then I'll be doing another Image book that I simply write.
That's
going to keep me busy next year.
Because it's interesting to me, and I talk to a lot of creators, and I always find that people tend to work for a variety of companies. Like you're doing stuff for IDW, and you're doing stuff for Image, and things like that. And the only bad thing for us, those of us that are fans, is that we have to kind of hunt around and find your stuff. But on the other hand, we could see more of your stuff because other people, somebody, let's say Image might print something that IDW might not be interested in.
Right. Yeah, you sort of have to take your I'm doing something for Oni too. You have to take your property wherever it fits. And it doesn't mean that people at IDW might not like the project I show them. It just might not fit their publishing profile. So you have to take it somewhere that does. And I realize that's tough on fans, especially, there's a whole subset of fans that just buy Marvel books or just buy DC books. So as far as they're concerned, I've been retired since Ant-Man. You know, if you're a Marvel guy, you don't know what I've done since Ant-Man.
Right.
If you're a DC guy, the last thing you see me, I take that back. I have an Adventures of Superman story coming out in February, but.
Oh, cool.
Outside of that, you haven't seen anything by me since, a Batman story I did a year ago. So,
but people need to be more, if you want a good story, you need to search for it, I've come to understand. That's what I look for. There are names I look for, and yours is one of the names that I look for. I go through the whole, the previews, which we call the phone book, and I go through and I pick through and I look and see, try to figure out who's doing what where. And if I see your name on it, I tell the people, this is why I want this one.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And that is how I shop too. I don't really follow characters. I don't follow companies. I follow talent. And sometimes it makes me buy more than I should, but, it's always a rewarding experience. You know, it's going to be a good book.
Because there's just some books out like now today that are just, 10 years ago, I would say, they'll never do that. So I'm kind of glad people are, I'm glad that you're getting to do things and you're getting to tell the stories that you want. And I think that's good for the industry, honestly, because.
The more diverse the voices get, the better. I don't know if we've ever talked about this phenomenon before, this phenomenon of narrow casting, where there's so much product out right now, you can sort of get exactly what you want from the comics, from the comic shop. You could be somebody that goes in and buys just one type of comic and buys six comics a week and never buy a Marvel or DC comic. Because pretty much every range of interest is represented now.
I honestly think this is one of the best times to buy comics that I've seen.
I agree.
Yeah, and it's just great.
It's the promised land that was sort of hinted at when Image began.
Yeah.
That we were going to sort of break out of this studio system. And I love Marvel and DC, don't get me wrong. I love those books and characters, but it's great to see creators with the kind of freedom to do exactly what they want.
Yeah. God, it's just great. And I never know exactly if I'm going to like stuff or not. Sometimes I'll buy something just because I kind of like the look of it or what the premise is. And I'll go and get it. And God, it's just such good stuff. Even like the digital books that are coming out now.
Well, that's the great thing about the digital books now. You can sample something, and if you like it, then go back and get the trade, or if you like it, go back and get the back issues.
Well, you mentioned that Adventures of Superman, and that's a good thing because DC gets my double dipping that way. I'll buy the 99 cents when they come out, and then when the paper copy comes out, I'll buy it so that I have a copy of it to keep for myself.
Wayne, I think they know that.
Because I tell you, I honestly, so many times I go into the store and they say, aren't you going to read it? I said, no, I read the digital version of this already.
Yeah.
I just want to have a good copy.
I might want to read it again. I'm like, I read stuff digitally, and then if I like it, I buy it on paper. I've never left anything just digital.
No.
And I'm the same with my music. I buy stuff. I download stuff from iTunes. If I like it, I will buy the CD. I don't know. That's the old collector in me, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I think that this is a great time as far as, like, variety of stuff we were talking about. Because you have, like, Monkey Brain Comics. They have great stuff on there, and digital mostly, and then DC's doing stuff. Marvel actually has put their toe in the water occasionally with digital stuff. So, I mean, do you actually buy a lot of digital comics?
I do, actually. And most, and I'm not shilling for Monkey Man because I have a book with him. But the first issue came out a long time ago, and we're in a huge delay for the second issue. But
Dropout.
I'm not pimping it really hard right now until we have the second issue ready. But Monkey Brain's, you know, lineup seemed, I haven't been disappointed by anything from them.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff, you know, I feel like I need to buy digitally because that's how it's available first.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Marvel and DC stuff, I don't tend to buy digitally because I'm at the comic shop so much.
Mm-hmm.
And even the stuff they put out as a digital first will be on paper eventually. Mm-hmm. And I think things look better on paper. I know I sound like that phony that says things sound better on vinyl, but I think the comics look better on paper.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm definitely going to go after the Adventures of Superman story. Do you know how many parts it is?
It is a one-shot written by Fabian Nicieza, and it features the return of Sugar and Spike to the DC.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
So it is a Sugar and Spike Superman team-up.
You know, those Superman adventures on digital are actually kind of fun.
I love them. Well, you know, it's where you can still find the underwear, right? It's sort of classic Superman. And no matter what happens with the character in the regular continuity, in the new 52 continuity, you can still pick up the Adventures of Superman book and see him using his frost breath and his heat vision and, you know, flying around the world stuff. You can see all that wonderful Silver Age Grant Morrison stuff that's so beautiful.
You know, if I remember correctly, you drew Legends of the Dark Knight.
Yeah,
story.
About a year ago I did a longer 30-page, three-part Legends of the Dark Knight with my buddy Josh Bialkoff. And that was a blast.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Oh, man. There's so many good things out there now. It's kind of hard to, track it all down.
Yeah, I'm so behind on books I love. I'm behind on. I'm a big fan of Saga, and you know, and people are like, oh well. I'm like, don't talk to me. I haven't read anything past issue four. You know, and I'm just this last week I've caught up. But I'm that way on everything. I didn't read an issue of Starman until it was done.
Oh wow!
And then I read them all, and it was great. But when you're a working comic professional, sometimes reading comics feels a little bit like work. And you want to work. And also sometimes you get, I don't know how to put this, but when you read or watch a film or listen to music, you get inspired to work. And sometimes you can't get inspired. Sometimes you need to, like, back off of that and work, you know, just work on what's in front of you. And sometimes reading comics sparks that sort of, those little tangents you might run off on. And so part of the discipline of being a creator is not always indulging in what you want to read.
Well, Phil, you know, I wish you a lot of success going forward. You're always making good things, and I enjoy, like I said, Thunder Agents and Invincible Universe, and looking forward to announcements of other things you're going to be doing very soon.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Wayne, and I'd be happy to come back anytime.
Okay, well, maybe we'll talk with you when this other thing gets announced.
Sure.
Okay, we'll do that.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com.
Talk about a couple of news stories I think are worth your attention. The first news item came down late on Friday that the Batman editor for DC, Mike Martz, is going back to Marvel as an executive editor.
And I'm sorry to hear that, because I think what he's done with Batman has been really great. And it's been the strongest line in the DC universe for a long, long time. And with the New 52, it's going quite well, too. To use a timely metaphor, it's like when you win the Super Bowl, everybody else comes in and cleans out all the good talent. And that's probably what Marvel's doing with Mr. Martz. So I'm really sorry he's leaving DC and going to Marvel. I hope he does a good job over there, and I hope he's got some good things. But they didn't say what he was going to be doing yet. If he ends up on Moon Knight, I'm going to be quite unhappy. And the second news item I want to talk about also came out on Friday. Jesse Eisenberg has been chosen as the next Lex Luthor, as Warner Brothers announced. And they also announced a second casting name. Jeremy Irons is going to be Alfred. That's an interesting one. I'm much more interested in the Alfred one than I am in Lex Luthor. But a lot of people seem to be very upset about Mr. Eisenberg being chosen, because he seems to be a lot younger and a lot less established as an actor than, say, Mr. Irons is. I want to jump on a favorite hobby horse of mine for a minute. Every time Marvel makes a casting decision for one of their films, it's greeted with unanimous applause from certain folks on the internet. And when DC and Warner Brothers makes an announcement for one of their upcoming projects, it seems like the same people come out and just jeer at it constantly. We can't believe how terrible these are. So there's really this double standard going on, that Joss Whedon is a genius while Zack Snyder is an idiot. And I get really tired of that stuff. The proof of the pudding is going to be when the movie comes out. I mean, there were folks I know who were big Marvel fans who denounced Man of Steel, and they had never seen a single frame of the movie. I really take all this stuff with a grain of salt. I know there are certain folks who are big Marvel fans, like I'm a DC fan, but I get real tired of that double standard. So if you're a Marvel fan out there, don't come out there within seconds after an announcement that Warner Brothers has done and go out there and rail against how terrible it is. I'm reminded of Ben Affleck's appearance on a late night talk show when he was advised not to read emails after his announcement was made. And the very first one that he read had no all the way across it. So he stopped reading the internet for a while after that. And I think that's what has to happen with Warner Brothers. The only way they can really change people's minds is just continually making good product. So I'm with you, DC and Warner Brothers. Keep it up. I think you've made some good choices, and we'll see how the movies turn out. That's a wrap for this episode. Be back next week when we'll have much more on the comics universes. But until then, keep reading your comics.